Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hi, and welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am Grant Goldberg. Before I introduce my co-host, I want to mention that this is a Nico Thorpe fan podcast, and he proved in his post-game interview that he is not only the most fashion-forward Seahawk, but between the glasses, the headphones, the hairdo, there's not one sharper man in the league. Now, Spike, how do you feel about Nico Thorpe's outfit and interview after the game?
I think he's an icon. I think Nico Thorpe is an icon, both on and off the field. I love a gunner in any situation who can be by the ball on every punt and not commit dumb penalties, and that's Nico Thorpe, and recovered a fumble after pressuring Tavon Austin. That's Nico Thorpe. Looks like the fourth member of Migos, as Natalie Wiener from Bleacher Report pointed out. That's Nico Thorpe. And got me and Grant, who were both clearly going through the Seahawks video archive at the same time, to separately screenshot different stills of his post-game interview, post them on Twitter. Nico Thorpe actually faved mine. Did he fave yours, Grant?
No, I'm actually kind of salty right now that you mentioned that.
Yeah, especially mine was a half hour later than yours, but I got the Nico Thorpe fave.
I gotta take a moment, actually.
Yeah. Well, Grant does that, I'll tell you that today's Locked On Seahawks podcast is brought to you by MyBookie.ag, a great place to bet on sports if that's what you want to do. I thought yesterday's Seahawks-Rams game was 16-10 win and, like, so much more fun than the last few Seahawks-Rams games that had similar score lines.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter, I think it was Zach Whitman that said it, but we Rams the Rams.
Yeah.
It was incredible. It was almost like the game a few years ago where we had to have that fourth down play and eventual goal line stand to get the win. And it was the first win away from home against the Rams since 2013.
Yeah, and that year, good things happened at the end of the season. I don't want to jinx anything, but if I remember correctly, that year ended well.
Yeah, I think it did. I think it presented me with some opportunities to buy some merch that kind of signaled the Seahawks accomplishments. I'm hoping for a similar outcome.
I wore said merch on my feet because I have great Seahawks Super Bowl socks at the LA Coliseum yesterday to watch the game, so that was exciting.
Right, Spike, you were there, and I was just wondering really quick, who's the person besides maybe Earl Thomas that stood out the most to you live and in person?
I've got two answers for that. One is Bobby Wagner, who I feel like maybe got a little bit of heat on Twitter for missing some plays in the first half, but he was everywhere, and you could see the Rams have to sort of start scheming around him and just get nothing going in the run game. And it really felt like Bobby Wagner was there, A, to prevent the Rams from getting any explosives in the run game, and then also to just basically take away Todd Gurley. So that was one. The other was the woman behind me in the stadium who spent the first quarter screaming in my ear, then passed out cold in the second quarter. And when we turned around in the fourth quarter, had peed herself. So... So that was wild. And her husband was just there and was like, yeah, this happens sometimes. So I don't know exactly what that relationship is or what was going on there, but that definitely was my other standout performer in the stadium yesterday.
More like sit-down performer, if I'm going to be technical about it. But that took a turn where I did not expect it to. I'm going to be honest, I didn't expect you to go the route of woman peeing herself while asleep behind you.
Yes.
And I can only imagine sitting in the Coliseum all day sleeping. It's a dehydrating experience. I'd be burnt to a crisp.
Yes.
That lady can improve on a lot of stuff. And I think that...
She's got to watch back the film.
Right. No, put on the All-22 and take some notes. Now, while that lady has a lot to improve on, the Seahawks do too. Even though they picked up the win, there is some noticeable things that they can improve on. I'll start it off by saying that the Seahawks are a passing team now. Until they recognize that, they're going to make the game a lot harder on themselves. It's almost like, you know, running into a wall. This week's wall was Aaron Donald. You see them constantly try to get the run going without success, really. You know, until they flip the switch and start to, you know, pick up those, you know, mid-level gains through the air and kind of open up things in the passing game first, then you're going to see these slow starts and you're going to have these games where you sweat all the way through these 16-10 games where, you know, your defense is on the field most of the game, they're tired out, and it presents these opportunities to the other team to have these comeback victories. Luckily, Cooper Kupp had more tackles on the day than game-winning touchdowns, so... That was favorable for the Seahawks.
I was just going to say, in terms of the passing game, like, if the goal of the running game is to open up the passing game, we ran the ball 25 times yesterday for 62 yards, which is just clearly ineffective. But our longest pass of the day went for 21 yards, and that was our only pass over 15 yards on the entire day. So it wasn't like running the ball like softened up the Rams secondary to allow for explosives. We still had to dink and dunk it down the field when we did go to the passing game. It was just much more effective because we were picking up 7 to 10 yards a play rather than 3 to -4 yards, depending on Aaron Donald's mood on any given snap.
Yeah, we saw a couple plays where Aaron Donald just like started the play in the Seahawks backfield. Like he moved off sides on Madden and like was right next to Russell Wilson as he snapped the ball.
Yeah.
You don't want that to happen.
Aaron Donald's PFF grade, and I know people don't always agree with their grades, but it was 96.8, and people do always agree with PFF tracking stats. He had 10 QB pressures himself. 10! Grant, that's too many.
10. And
we're back to the too many pressures part of the podcast.
Right.
10 from one guy is as bad as 34 from a team. 10 from one guy!
It's a person who is regarded as the best player at his position, maybe the best player on that side of the ball. But anyway, you look at it, 10 pressures from one guy, that's like a bully making someone punch themselves.
Yeah, and we had plays where we held up against him too. Like, there were noticeable moments in the game where he didn't ruin the game, and he still got 10 pressures. Like, oh my god. Why do the Lions have to pass on Aaron Donald? It's crazy. He should not be in our division. I'm still mad.
Oh, my God.
Calm me down. Calm me down, Grant.
Okay, so taking away from a situation where someone needs to block, the Seahawks split Jimmy Graham out wide a lot. They put him in the slot a lot. He only had, I can count it on one hand, the amount of snaps that he had at tight end yesterday. So they're putting him in a position where he doesn't have to block people, where generally that's good for Jimmy Graham and good for the Seahawks. They're utilizing him in a way that they should have been all along. He had 8 receptions, only 36 yards, but you know he's getting the ball a lot more, and he had that touchdown in the red zone. Praise the Lord. They targeted
that
him in the red zone.
It was like Jimmy Graham running a Doug Baldwin little feint and then an out route, and it like couldn't have worked better.
Right.
Couldn't have been more open. Couldn't have been a nicer throwing window. Couldn't have been an easier completion. It's like, oh, yeah, Jimmy Graham can do that. He did that with Drew Brees. I think I'm checking the stats now, 690,000 times.
That's how many times. It's actually
690,001. Oh, my bad.
But it's exactly like that Doug Baldwin route, except with a different player. Russell Wilson, you know, kind of puts it on Doug Baldwin a little more, whereas Jimmy's noticeably bigger than Doug Baldwin.
Yep. And I think we can all agree.
You don't need Pro Football Focus to tell you that. He kind of just gives Jimmy an opportunity to play the ball, and it worked out well for the Seahawks. And I want them to do that more often. I think everybody wants them to do that more often. So if you're listening, Daryl Bevel, Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, Jimmy Graham, please, that made us happy. And ultimately, it contributed to winning the game. So Jimmy Graham touchdowns in the red zone wins you games.
Yeah. And speaking of winning games, Grant, those of you at home in podcast land who were listening to last week's episode, Grant and I picked a game for MyBookie.ag. One of us got the pick right, and it was the one of us who believed in the Seahawks. Yeah, that was me. I picked the Seahawks to cover a little point spread if I had bet money on MyBookie.ag using their app, which had live in-game betting, which I couldn't really use at the Coliseum because the Wi-Fi was terrible. But if it had been good, I could have bet and won money based on my awesome pick. Let's forget who picked the over-under. Do you remember who picked the over-under? I don't. Do you, Grant?
Well, I actually know. I recount it quite well who picked the over-under correctly. And it was me.
Come on.
I picked the over-under correctly. I believe it was set at, 42 points or something like that. The person who didn't believe in the Seahawks got that right. So while my heart and the brain, they're not synced up when it comes to picking the game. But over-unders, I'm your guy.
Yeah, and I'll say that, when I didn't think we were going to totally Rams the Rams, as Zach said, and we did, and I'm glad that we did it. And you know what? That's the good thing about betting on MyBookie.ag is you're spreading out your emotions. You know, I won half, you won half, I lost half, you lost half. We're both winners. That's the way I see it. So go to MyBookie.ag, use the promo code LOCK, get 100% deposit bonus. Oh my God. Pick the game right, listen to me. Pick the numbers right, listen to Grant. Either way, you win at MyBookie.ag.
Right, it's as easy as 1, 2, 3 with MyBookie.ag.
See, Grant's the numbers guy. That's not, I can't
right.
count.
Right, I was a part of the preliminary cuts for the Jackson 5. So
you could only get to 3.
Yeah, that was that was the second L I took besides picking the game wrong.
1, 2, 3. It's as easy as I don't know any letters. You're fired.
Yeah, it was kind of a wake-up moment, and it kind of got me into podcasting instead of music groups.
You did the right thing.
Right. And a couple other Seahawks did the right thing, but they didn't receive as much praise as, say, a Earl Thomas or Richard Sherman. Spike, who was your unsung hero of sorts in the game yesterday?
Well, I'm going to go back to that line battle, and I'm going to highlight Luke Jokel and Justin Britt, who I thought did a pretty dang good job dealing with a really, really strong Rams front. When Aaron Donald lined up over Odey Obuchi, things got really bad really fast. But especially in pass protection, Jokel was able to anchor really well against Donald. Britt did a really good job of making sure that there weren't really free rushers getting to Wilson. He was frequently getting pressured after a beat or two, but I think there was only one play, and it was one where Odhiambo, I think, just like missed the snap count and just got burned right off the line. That was the only play where there was like a free rusher coming at Russell Wilson. And yes, we are clearly grading the Seahawks offensive line on a curve where only one time did Russell Wilson get absolutely annihilated. Does that count as a win? But I think it does count as a win against a team like the Rams. I thought Jokel and Britt in particular stood out. Jokel is apparently getting a little touch-up knee surgery. It's a little meniscus trim, and that's time to the bye week. He might miss the game against the Giants, but should be back for our game against the Texans. So I'd say on balance, Jokel and Britt were my unsung heroes. Jokel's shown me some stuff to make me happy. Hopefully this knee surgery goes well. There's no complications and he can come back and be that same sort of impact player going forward and give the Seahawks enough of a base to get their offense working. Grant, who is your unsung hero of the game?
Well, it's kind of not an unsung hero in a way that he received a lot of praise on Twitter, but I just want to talk about him again.
Yeah,
Shaquille
please.
Griffin is a baller.
Yeah.
And that's a phrase that I've used with a ton of players, including icon Nico Thorpe. But Shaquille Griffin was in on so many plays. He had great coverage all day. He spearheaded some run stops. He was the first to make contact on Gurley a few times and kind of wrap him up initially and allows the second level of the defense to kind of get in and make the tackle eventually. He was everywhere on Sunday, and I said this last week, but he's the long-term answer opposite side Sherman.
Yeah. He really plays like a young Sherman. And that comes down to occasionally getting completely turned around on some tackles. But his coverage is good. His tackling in the run game is good. Obviously, Sherman is a rookie who is different than Sherman now. And the fact that Griffin's playing like that doesn't mean he will necessarily mature to be the Hall of Famer that Sherman is. But if he gets 75% of the way there, the Seahawks are set at cornerback.
Right. And to keep track of a ex-Seahawks cornerback, he was a healthy scratch, Byron Maxwell. So,
oh, he was a healthy scratch?
Yep, against the Matt Castle-led Tennessee Titans.
Oh, my God.
And so that's your status update on ex-LOB members. It's a somber note. And then Brandon Browner met up with the team yesterday after their win. So it was kind of an LOB reunion.
I saw something that exploded my brain, which was Stephen Terrell is getting snaps currently in Kansas City, where he's come in. He isn't the first backup, but he's getting some snaps and is playing a bunch of special teams, and he's the next man up at safety now that Kansas City lost Eric Berry. And I'm like, if they have to start playing Terrell all the time, replacing a Hall of Fame caliber safety, I know how that ends. It doesn't end well. But he, I think, got knocked out of the game yesterday on a special teams play. Yeah, this sport is...
It's brutal.
It's brutal.
There's no other way about it, yeah.
Yeah. And so, okay, so we got our unsung heroes. I think the game balls are clearly going to Earl and Bobby this week. I can't think of anyone else. You want to give it to anybody else?
I'd like to give it not for the game on Sunday, but in the days leading up, the sound effects people at NFL Network, they captured Russell Wilson saying, that boy's special, to J.D. McKissick. And so throughout the whole game yesterday, whenever he touched the ball, I had to give out a little, that boy's special. And just shout out to NFL Network, shout out to J.D. McKissick, who I think the Seahawks should give every outside running play they have now, because Eddie Lacy does not do that well.
Yeah, and Thomas Rawls missed an opportunity to blow up a play big to the outside and cut it back. He got the first down, I think, on that play, but there was a huge lane there that he just didn't get to. Also, McKissick had the Seahawks' lone explosive play from scrimmage yesterday. So, shout out to J.D. McKissick for being our best offensive weapon right now. Yeesh.
Right. He had the one explosive play, but also saw him just get exploded by Alec Ogletree, and I immediately just cringed, and I was like, well, that's our other running back going on the IR.
But no, he seemed fine.
No, he's healthy. He got an explosive play, and he looks to be a weapon going on for the Seahawks.
Yeah, and I mean, there were some little minor injuries. Bennett got a little bit of a foot injury. Doug Baldwin didn't look 100%, but no significant injuries for the Seahawks. Heading into a bye week gives everybody a chance to heal up. Pretty exciting. I mean, I think in my mind watching this game, I was downplaying how important it was, because to get to 3-2 with that win head-to-head over the Rams on the road versus being 2-3 with the Rams 4-1 in the division, that's the whole thing. And the Seahawks, you know, were outplayed for big chunks of the game. And to gut out that win is just huge. It's just huge. And they've really positioned themselves really well, given how uneven they've been so far this year.
Right. And I think I saw statistically it almost doubled their chances to win the division.
That makes sense.
32 to 64.
That sounds right.
You know, a little far off from that. I mean, that doesn't hurt the Seahawks' chances to win the division.
Beating the Rams, who were
the number one offense going into the game on Sunday, and kind of stonewalling them. You see the Seahawks match up against number one offenses, and they fare pretty well. I remember one matchup. It was, you know, Russell Wilson's rookie year against the Patriots. It was number one versus number one. The Seahawks beat Tom Brady and the Patriots in Seattle, which is the only place where he's yet to get a win.
Well, I was going to remember another one in a certain Super Bowl that we won 43-8 against the number one offense of that year. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I have a shirt kind of commemorating that.
Yeah. I do want to say, though, that this Rams team is for real.
Oh, like, yeah. I was going to mention that I think they're one of the top teams in the NFC, and to do that, it speaks volumes about the Seahawks team.
Yeah, I mean, McVay's offensive design was incredible. Like, the misdirection, the way that he was able to create simple yet intricate, like, easy reads for Goff to make, but with intricate misdirection around them. It really, I think it slowed down Cam Chancellor in a way that affected our defense all day. I mean, obviously the Rams didn't do a bunch. I mean, we really did bend but not break, but they were picking up yards in a way that our offense couldn't. And it was really impressive. And it took a pretty Herculean effort from Earl and Bobby and Richard in particular, but the whole team, especially Frank Clark in the second half stepping up, to be able to limit them to only 3 points in the red zone from, I think, 5 red zone trips. Like, it was, I mean, they kept getting knocked out because of penalties and sacks and turnover. Like, we did such a good job in the red zone, but the fact that they were able to get there consistently was really impressive. Jared Goff is fine, you know.
He looks like an NFL player.
Yeah, like, his ceiling now is what? Like, I mean, it's not like Stafford. I don't think it's quite that good, but like it's like a real quarterback.
Better than Flacco?
Yeah, it's somewhere in that Flacco, Dalton-y, you know, league average sort of range. But
league average plus, we'll put it there.
Yeah, yeah, but like it's better than Bortles, like, which felt like a ceiling coming into this year, and his floor felt like Tim Couch or something. You know, He looks very good. The crowd also, it started to feel like a rivalry at that game. Also, there are a lot of young punk Seahawks fans in LA. Grant, your thoughts?
I'm just happy to see more people like me. it's kind of like a feeling of family coming together at a reunion.
Yeah.
And I'm happy. I'll welcome them into my heart, and it's going to be a beautiful friendship going forward. But I wanted to change your Herculean effort into a Lee-esque effort from
Earl Thomas,
who said he watches Bruce Lee movies in preparation for games. And you saw on his karate chop against his second karate chop against the Rams, denying a touchdown. And his wife said, you know, if that's what it takes, we can watch, you know, Enter the Dragon every night.
Yeah, and credit to Earl Thomas, who was PFF's top graded player on the Seahawks after they regraded the game. He got a pick, he gets that fumble, he only got beat on one play, and it almost cost us the game, but he used his wizardry, which, you know, might be the glow from The Last Dragon, which is a kung fu movie based on Bruce Lee movies, in which there's like a psychic element involved as well. He might have used that on Cooper Kupp, so who knows? But Earl had a great game. Earl, I wrote about this today in The Stranger, but for me, and this is my hot take, Earl Thomas, all-time greatest Seahawk. That's my hot take.
I have a hard time saying no to that. I definitely think he's the all-time greatest Seahawks defender. And I'll just say this. If I were anywhere near the vicinity of Earl Thomas, I would not catch a single thing. Whether it be someone tossing like my phone back to me, not to mention a football, like someone throwing a football, you know, with high velocity and having, you know, the greatest Seahawks defensive player of all time running towards me or running after me, I would not catch a thing. It'd bounce off my face and I'd cry.
Yeah, and I'll say this, like, I like the idea of Steve Largent, but if you were to put Steve Largent up against Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas, like, he's really old now, so I don't think he could do much. Yeah,
I don't think he's playing football much these days.
Yeah.
I think it's mainly, you know, political with him.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's a good matchup for him. I don't think Walter Jones nowadays would match up well with Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett, Frank Clark. So I don't think an alumni game would work out very well for the all-time great Seahawks.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that covers it. I think it covers an awesome win. We've got more podcasts this week in the bye week. We got a great guest lined up for Wednesday. Tomorrow we'll be talking injuries and press conferences. Thursday, we'll probably do something weird on Thursday. Maybe we'll take a look around the league, look around the division, have some fun with that. But yeah, I think that's going to cover our recap.
Yeah,
Grant, you got anything else?
I just want to thank mybookie.ag for bringing up today's show. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to get up to a 100% bonus on your first deposit. And so you can be winning like us after the Seahawks game.
And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. If you leave a 5-star review, which you should do, Don't leave a one-star review complaining about me swearing that one time. I'm going to keep complaining about that every episode for a while.
If you keep doing that, we might get more one-star reviews.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. Okay, you know what? Follow your heart. Don't buy it. But if you genuinely believe it's a five-star podcast, leave a five-star review. Put your Twitter handle in there. You'll be entered across the Locked On Network. Someone's getting a free PFF Edge account every week. It lets you know about these pressure rates. It lets you know who is doing things. If you love the grades, you get the grades. But even if you're all about the stats, their tracking stats are the best in the game. You got to get that PFF Edge account. Maybe get it for free if you leave us a great review.
It's a one-stop shop if you want to get in-depth with the game. So I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off for Locked On Seahawks.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.